From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. 5 years after a U.S. engineered and backed coup in Ukraine sent the country's elected president into exile, a new presidential election and election for parliament this year may signal a new direction for the struggling country. For more on that, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, international policy analyst based in Moscow, from Moscow via Skype Friday. Hey, Mark, so we never got to Ukraine last week, and it's been, you know, really an important event over the last 5 years, 6 years, with the situation there has changed some with the last election, maybe in form, maybe in substance, maybe both. Let's talk about that, what it might mean going forward.
Okay. Don, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR.
Our pleasure.
All right. So, in the last, it was almost 2 weeks ago that we saw these Rada, which is to say the Ukrainian parliament, parliamentary elections in Ukraine. This follows the presidential election of what was just a half a year ago, the extreme dark horse, one of the extreme dark horse candidates, Volodymyr Zelensky. Volodymyr Zelensky is a comedian with no political experience, other than he played a president, a school teacher who kind of accidentally became president after becoming a viral YouTube sensation on a TV show that was called Servant of the People, Sluga Naroda. The political climate in Ukraine is so disgusted with the previous West-backed putsch regime government that they had just adopted an attitude of throw all the crooks out, and that is exactly what happened. Now, speaking of both the presidential elections are just over a month ago, a couple months ago, the Rada elections. Rada elections would have been scheduled for half a year later in October. But because this new comedian turned president, Zelensky, is a complete newcomer, he had no party to represent him in the Rada, which means he had no support whatsoever and all opposition. So he kind of forced through with his popular support in the country now snap elections, calling them just 2 months after he was elected president. The results are pretty amazing. His party, named after his television show, Servant of the People, a few weeks ago had zero members in parliament because it was brand new. Now it completely dominates the parliament. They have a supermajority on their own. The Rada elections in Ukraine are split in half. Half is on a party list, right, where you vote for a party and that party gets to select, has a list of people that it ranks in order, and then however many seats they get, they follow that order, and that's how many assume those positions. The other half is single mandate elections, where in local areas you elect individuals who may be are associated with a party, but it's not like a party list.
Right.
It's more like how it's done in the United States, actually. It was expected, according to the polls, that Zelensky's party would do well, but it did better than expected. In the party lists, it mopped up with 43% of the vote.
Really?
Then 43% of the vote. Then it did even more unexpectedly, it did better in the single mandates.
Wow.
So They now have out of the 450 votes in the Ukrainian Rada, altogether they now have 254 seats.
Wow.
226, I believe, for a supermajority. So they have over 50% of the votes easy. On top of that, there is still a number of independent seats, 46, and a lot of those will will probably maneuver to ally in votes with Servant of the People. So from nothing to a supermajority for the first time in Ukrainian political history in one election.
You know, and this is really not the result of organizing a party. They took a label, the name of a TV show, basically, and slap it on their effort.
Yeah. Wow. What's more is that almost none of these people have any prior political experience as elected politicians. Now, a number of them, it turns out, when you start taking a look at who they are, a number of them are aides of people who used to serve in the Rada, right? And so on, in different parties and so on. But, you know, because there is no Servant of the People party, there's no real ideology. Zelensky has, it has been put out by some of it as of his close advisors that him and his party are adopting a libertarian, slightly neoliberal style economics to the country, but that translates so poorly into Ukraine with a very state-heavy economy and employment that we will see where that goes. But they have no ideology, they have no unifying real factor to bring them together. So it remains completely unknown how they will act. For one thing, they don't know what they're doing. In fact, one of the universities in Kiev, one of the main universities, for the past couple of weeks has been running a crash course on basic civics and the basics of the constitution and how the parliament works to prepare all of these people for taking office. Now,
it's a crash course with a Rada full of crash dummies.
So there's big questions about how much ideological or party loyalty these people will have. There's a whole lot up in the air, right? And experience and incompetence, right? The oligarch-controlled Ukrainian politics with the politicians that have been there since independence obviously haven't done anything for Ukraine, right? So I understand the sentiment of throw all the crooks out and bring completely unrelated people in. At the same time, you know that's going to create all new problems of its own because people, really have no idea what they're doing running.
It's a rebellion. It's not a revolution. It's a rebellion. A rebellion is basically just an uprising. You know, people say, no, we're not doing that anymore. And they, stand up and start smacking people around, but they don't have a program for the next step.
Now, there's no question that this election represents, I believe, a tide of public opinion against the results of the last few years. A large part of it is economic discontent, with the results of the West-backed Maidan Putsch regime. But on some, it's exasperation with the West dominant or, East identity politics. There's a degree of that. And Zelensky's party won by taking no real strong positions on anything, right? It was people voted for them to get rid of Poroshenko and his crooks.
How did they do geographically? Is there a geographic map that shows?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So let me real quick say that it does represent a tide of public opinion. However, there's a lot going around in Western media and commentary. It's talking about these great free and fair elections in Ukraine. Now let's be clear that it does represent a tide of public opinion, but these are not complete free and fair elections in Ukraine. And I'll tell you why. First of all, because millions of Ukrainians didn't vote in this election. And Ukraine's population has drastically shrunk. They haven't done a census in an extremely long period of time. So if some in excess of 6 million people were at least were disenfranchised in this election, that's a major component of Ukrainian society that just was not allowed to vote. And first of all, the ones excluded, there are some at least 3 million plus Ukrainian citizens living and working in Russia, aggressor Russia, right?
Right.
They were disenfranchised. They were not allowed to vote, right? In any other country that Ukrainians lived, they could go to their embassies or consulates and just cast their vote. That's the way it's done in most post-Soviet countries. It's the way it's done here. But Ukrainians who live in Russia could not vote. They were forbidden to vote. And that's some 3 million Ukrainians because they're regarded as politically unreliable. On top of that, there are still 3 million, 3 million plus Ukrainians in the DNR and LNR, the Donetsk and Luhansk republics of the Donbass, right, that have never accepted the results of the 2014 putsch and the new regime, that just continue. You know, they're called separatists, whatever you want to call them. They're still not playing. The Minsk agreements have been completely abandoned by the Ukrainian government, both the old and the new. There's no sign that they'll be rejoining the rest of Ukraine anytime in the near future. On top of this, much of East Ukraine, particularly Donbass, the parts of Donbass that are government controlled, are still under what they call an anti-terrorist zone. It's basically military occupation,
right,
including by all of these Banderite fascist and ultra-nationalist battalions, Izov, Idar, Right Sector, and the others. This is voting under the barrel of a gun, and not just under the barrel of a gun, but under the barrel of Grad missile launchers,
right? Shell mortars, all kind of, right?
Every day, right? And it's usually considered in the West, right? Oh, they're voting at the barrel of a gun. It's not a free election. Well, okay, you've got there. And then the fourth major thing there is simply, politically, of course, it's not free because all leftist parties in Ukraine have been banned. And before the 2014 putsch, the Communist Party of Ukraine was probably, I think, around the third or fourth biggest party in the country. So the Communist Party and 3 other leftist parties have been banned. The leftists have no real political representation. Certainly not Eastern Ukrainian leftists have no possible political representation in the country.
Purged and blanched. I forget what the term of art is, denazified.
On top of that, the lustration, the previous government of Yanukovych, the party of regions, the party of East Ukraine, East and South Ukraine, basically, that won the last election, was lustrated, which means it was completely leveled. And everyone who had served in the previous government was banned from running for office again. That's called lustration. It's a purge. Although the people of East Ukraine did reorganize and form one or two parties of their own since then, and they did surprisingly well, and we'll get to that in a second, but they have to rebuild their complete organization. All of their people with experience who had served in government were banned. They had to bring new people up. They had to, make new connections. They're operating under an environment where they're regarded by, the regime in Kiev as the enemies and so on. So this was a major disadvantage, to them, over the last 5 years. And they're just started to recover a fraction of their political strength. So while there is a huge upsurge of public opinion against the previous government that saw Zelensky and his Servant of the People party come to dominance, it's in the face of all of this. So it's not really free and fair elections, but it does represent a public opinion to an interesting extent. Now, the other parties that made it in to the on the party list, the second party was actually the party that now mostly represents East Ukraine. It's called the Opposition Platform
for Life.
Part for Life, right? Yeah. Party for Life. They did the second best, despite the fact that they're viewed as a pro-Russian party. They're associated with an Eastern Ukrainian oligarch, Viktor Medvedchuk, who is seen as having connections with Putin. He kind of actually played a back seat conduit of communication between Putin and Poroshenko over the last few years, particularly on the Minsk Accords, which again are completely abandoned, so not that that's important now. But and they got around 13% of the vote, and they outright won in the government-controlled areas of the Far East Donbass. The other two parties to make it in are the party on the party list is Batkivshina, the Fatherland Party of the gas princess oligarch Yulia Tymoshenko. With a new hairdo. Well, yeah. It's, she's playing hipster now.
Yeah.
Rather than nationalist. Yeah. She was previously prime minister of Ukraine. She ran for president and lost in the recent elections. And her party has drastically shrunk. It pulled in at 8%. Of just over 8% of the vote. The last party to make it in is the previous putsch president, Viktor Poroshenko's party. Petro Poroshenko's party. It used to be called the Poroshenko Bloc. It's been renamed now the European Solidarity Party. Again, they got wiped out. They got dropped. They got dropped down from some 30 some percent of the vote to 8%.
Yeah, they went from 132 seats to 25 seats in the Rada.
But that's his party is the strong voice of opposition, to the Zelensky government. And the last party to make it into the parliament is another completely new party. It's Golos, or Voice. It is another one of these out of politics. It is the party of the Ukrainian rock star Vakarchuk, who started his own kind of soft nationalist party. And they got into the Rada with just over the minimum 5% of the vote. And they will likely cooperate with Servant of the People, at least on some things, although they may cooperate with Tymoshenko and Poroshenko's party on other things. Now, if you take a look at the geographics of the vote, again, a Servant of the People won across most of Ukraine. They won the majority, again, because he didn't take any strong policy decisions east or west. He was really vague. He said he wanted peace in the Donbass, but not how. He said he wanted to continue the work of the Poroshenko government, but without the corruption. That was his big thing. He was against corruption, against politicians. Well, of course, you know, there's all this talk that he is actually the creature of the oligarch Igor Kolomoisky, the Jewish banker oligarch, the previous owner of Privat Bank, who was one of the big oligarchs who supported the Maidan in the beginning. despite being Jewish himself and having dual citizenship with Israel, which is technically illegal in Ukraine, but it doesn't matter. Of course, the laws don't apply to the really rich people like that. He funded, in the beginning, some of the biggest Ukrainian Banderite fascist slash ultra-nationalist battalions, Azov and Idar. He was the one bankrolling them. And in the beginning of the conflicts that came right after the putsch, he was appointed, not, you know, no kind of election, governor of the eastern city of Kharkov, in order to prevent a Russian spring there. He made all kinds of deals with the local mafia. It's been talked about even in the pages of Foreign Policy, crowing how he did that in order to prevent Russian separatist, you know, Eastern Ukrainian, rejection of the putsch there. But eventually he and Poroshenko fell out and fell apart badly. Kolomoisky's bank, Privat Bank, was the conduit through which tens of billions of dollars of IMF money was funneled in to prop up the new regime in Kiev, and a good chunk of that went completely missing. I mean, billions.
And that was, it was almost like the Pentagon.
Almost went into Kolomoisky's pockets.
Right, right.
And his bank was nationalized then and taken away from him, and he basically fled in self-exile just ahead of criminal charges to Israel. But his television channel remained, and his television channel was the channel that Zelensky, servant of the people, became, you know, the hit show on. He is widely seen as, of course, backing Zelensky. Right. You know, his Zelensky was the candidate of his channel. I mean, every television channel in Ukraine is owned by a different oligarch, and that represents their politics, which television channel you watch. Kolomoisky's old lawyer is now Zelensky's chief of staff. And there's another of other connections like that.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, that we'll see how far that actually goes. Kolomoisky has returned to Ukraine since Zelensky won the election, basically deciding it's safe for him now. But, you know, it remains to be seen where it goes. So he didn't take a strong position. East or west, he's going to have to do that after the election.
Right.
So this super majority of popular opinion is going to fade, because you can't make both East and West Ukraine happy.
Right.
You can't make the people of those who supported the Maidan putsch and everything that's come since, and those in East Ukraine who were against it, although he managed with his vagueness and just the throw out the old bums, read into it why, you know, to achieve all of this. Right. Now, the only regions in Ukraine that did not vote for, that servant of the people did not win the majority of the vote on, were the extreme East and West. The extreme East, the two areas of Donbass, voted overwhelmingly for the opposition platform,
right,
Party of Life, that, again, is this now the second biggest party in the Rada, even though it's, you know, only 13%, 43 seats total, and Lvov, the most Western Ukrainian of West Ukrainian provinces, actually went to the rock star Vakarchuk's Voice Party, which, again, is kind of, this is because Wikipedia says it's liberal and pro-European. Well, it's pro-European, all right, and I would say soft nationalist more than liberal.
Right.
Now, the previous ultra-nationalists that had been such a big part of the Ukrainian Rada after the putsch in 2014, they did suffer a significant defeat in this election. A number of the most extreme ones had joined together in their own party to run And they failed to get into the Rada. A lot of them were beaten out there. But don't listen to the idea that there are no ultranationalists and Banderites in the new Ukrainian Rada, because they have infiltrated throughout a lot of the other parties. Now, there are not a lot of them in the Servant of the People Party. But, for instance, the number two person in Poroshenko's European Solidarity Party, you know, now reelected to the Rada, is the previous Putsch speaker of the Rada, the open neo-Nazi Andrei Paruby, right? The biggest political neo-Nazi in Ukraine.
The bully who throws stuff at people and, beats them up and stuff in Rada.
No, he directed the people to beat them up. Right. He was the founder, the co-founder of the Social Nationalist Party of Ukraine, which eventually became the Svoboda Party. And he was the commandant of the so-called self-defense forces of the Maidan, the one that fought them to overrun the government during the Maidan. He's an older guy. He's not the one who goes out and does the beating himself.
Organizes. He's the boss.
He's back in the Rada. He's not the speaker anymore. The second most powerful person in in the line of succession. But he's back in the Rada, and another of Umber ultranationalists are scattered throughout the European Solidarity Party, the Fatherland Party, and the Vakarchuk's rock stars voice party, because that's what happened. The ultranationalism was normalized in Ukraine with the Putsch.
Right.
The only other not real region of Ukraine that didn't go to Servant of the People is the abroad vote. And this is interesting because, of course, the abroad vote wasn't the people who live in Russia, the Ukrainian citizens who live in Russia, millions of them weren't allowed to vote. So that really skewed. That left the Ukrainians living in the U.S., the U.K., and Canada in particular to swing it. And they voted for Poroshenko's European Solidarity Party overwhelmingly. That was kind of interesting. So all the Ukrainian expats, as it were, in the West voted for the West's old support
for Poroshenko, who of course is the guy that ultimately was placed in power by the U.S. and Canada and all of that, because at the end of the day, after the Maidan, when they set up their rigged election, after they purged the left and the Russian ethnics and everyone else from the political process, that's the guy that won the election under those conditions. We're about out of time, so I'm wondering, just in 30 seconds or less, what do you see happening very next?
Okay, I see a lot of problems still for him governing, because he hasn't made up his mind whether he's going to turn west or east yet. I think it's going to be west, but he's going to have problems with the ultranationalists. He's talked about lustrating Poroshenko and all of the people who served in his government, and 11 criminal charges have been already brought against Poroshenko, who's pleading now with the U.S. to help prevent criminal charges for him. A Russian oil tanker was just seized in Odessa. Supposedly it's a tanker that participated in the blocking of the Sea of Azov thing. This is rather interesting. It was seized on the orders of the SBU. It doesn't appear that Zelensky's was informed about it, or that his government knew about it before it happened. Yeah. So it seems like an attempt, a preemptive attempt, just in case he wanted to try to prevent him from restoring relations with Russia. He did order the crew released, and Russia, after that, didn't respond at all.
So we'll see
Russia
where that goes.
Russia is giving him a little bit of room to see if he might possibly, I'm not optimistic about it, might want to try to restore some kind of relationship.
Right, we'll see where that goes, Marcus. Thank you very much.
Yep.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.